Tonight, the champ returns. The coldest cold open deliverer in the history of cold opens. Some might even say he's cold as balls.
Wait. Wait, we doing cold as balls or cold open? Because I smashed both.
Once again, the star of the WrestleMania Goes Hollywood cold open, Kevin Hart.
First rule of Hollywood. When the original does big numbers.
You are looking live at sold out SoFi Stadium in Los Angeles.
You better believe they're going to want a sequel. This time, they'll want more of everything. More star power. More action. More romance. And of course, more Kevin. Because it ain't Hollywood without Hart. Trademark that. When you lock down A-list talent, you don't need CGI. They live this shit.
This is what the business is all about.
Grab a snack and a cold one, because WrestleMania Sunday is about to be on. Don't forget the ice.
SoFi Stadium, you gotta be thrilled. This is gonna be good. I am fired up.
WrestleMania Goes Hollywood, the sequel.
Here at WrestleMania, the stakes simply don't get any higher.
Blazes, people. The show's about to start. That was great. How do I do it? How do I do it? How do I do it? Has anybody seen my world?
And now, Snickers and WWE 2K23 present the Global Entertainment Spectacular, WrestleMania.
I have to say, Drew's body looked phenomenal here. He was bronzed, a lovely level of chest hair, which is really hard to achieve if you're a manscaper. Are you too hairy?
Yes, very.
Yeah.
What's your routine? Do you just not bother, or do you like to have a little trim up?
No, I don't bother.
No? Alex?
I
thought you were about to get it out then. I can actually see you the first time now, by the way. I can see you move, which is very pleasant.
I embrace the hair on my body, and then I give me nether regions a bit of a trim.
Because it makes
it look bigger.
It does. Unfortunately, when you've got a cocktail sausage down there, it's not much. Actually, button mushroom, actually. Cocktail sausage, I'm being far too generous. I used to trim my chest hair a lot, and I've just done it for the first time in about 6 or 7 months, but it's long. I mean, it was longer than the hair on my head is at the moment. It was ridiculous. So, but the problem with the manscaping is if you're wearing like a white t-shirt or something, or like a light colored golf polo or something, you get the prickly hair sticking through, and that's not a great look, really. Like if you want to use up like a pastel shade in the summer, it's not about prickly hair coming through.
What the fucking hell are you talking about?
Sorry, I didn't even have that in my notes, actually. So we've gone off on a tangent there. Back to the match.
Hello and welcome to the Random Wrestling Review. It is time for WrestleMania 39 night 2 of WrestleMania 39, which means we're basically at the end of our WrestleMania series. I mean, we still have this year's show to cover, but actually, as that recording date, we have covered every single match on WrestleMania that's ever taken place. And so we begin with our hosts joining me today. So first of all, we have Stephen Coriander. How are you doing, Stephen?
Average Ben. I nearly called you Benjamin then. Is that your actual name, Benjamin?
It is.
Average Benjamin. I just got a bit of a cold. I'm not firing all cylinders, so hopefully I do an average to okay job on this podcast tonight, but I don't feel like I'm going to, so sue me.
Average Benjamin was thankfully a nickname that I didn't get saddled with when I was younger. And also we've got Alex Rockstar Kirkman in the house. How are you doing?
Yeah, I feel like battered shit, Ben, to be honest with you. Yeah, and I'm also got the man flu, stroke, cold. I thought it was COVID, actually. I was in a bad way, but I've done a test and it's negative. So it's just the man flu, which is even worse. But I am looking forward to doing this. I am looking forward to talking about this show, though, as I look forward to doing these shows all the time.
All right, well, try and sound a bit more like it then, yeah? Fucking hell.
Yeah. I can't wait. Come on. Woo!
And that makes a trio of Lurgy then on the pod today, because I am also feeling under the weather. So this might not be the customary energy that you usually come to expect from us. And indeed, I may not make any sense as I talk, just like I didn't a moment ago. But we're going to soldier on. And get through this as best we can. And I think this is going to be a very interesting one, because it is the last one in the series before this year's WrestleMania. And it's also one that we've been talking about for about a year now, which is pretty cool. I'm glad we finally get the chance to really go into it. So let's start with expectations. I'm going to begin with you, Alex. What are your expectations for this one?
Right. Okay. Well, first of all, Ben, you were potentially going to be my MVP of this show. And the reason being is that I streamed the show from my iPhone. And there was no issues whatsoever.
So there you go.
Thank you very, very, very much. But yeah, I'm really, really looking forward to this. I mean, it's obviously very recent. And, you know, from memory last year, I enjoyed both nights of this show. And I was particularly looking forward to chatting about it with one bit in particular. You know, I kind of know mine and Stephen's thoughts on a certain aspect of the show. And I've got a feeling it's going to take up most of the time. But I'm looking forward to talking about it. And yeah, really excited to watch the show and excited to talk about it too.
Alex is taking lessons in how to bury the lead. And what he's actually referring to, I'm sure, is the Snoop Dogg Miz Shane McMahon segment, which I'm definitely looking forward to talking about.
Obviously. What else? Obviously.
And Stephen, your expectations?
I didn't really want to watch the show, if I'm honest. I think I probably made that relatively clear. If anyone's followed my very angry Twitter about this night and in our WhatsApp group, I feel like this is a bit of a kind of like almost like a holiday romance that always all went wrong at the end. And that's what this was at the time when I was really loving WWE and more invested in the product than I'd been in many years, and felt like a happy child again, only for my childhood to be torn apart at the end of this night.
Yeah, well, fair enough. My expectations were, again, curious. I hadn't seen it, as I've discussed many times in the last couple of weeks. Didn't see this or the night one at the time. We have now done night one, covered it 2 weeks ago. And then this one, yeah, really looking forward to it. Very, very curious about how I'd feel about the result of the main event after having watched this, given how much conversation and how much oxygen we've given that conversation, and we are going to give that conversation much more oxygen today. Don't you worry. That is going to be key to today. Before I go any further, though, I'm going to throw out some plugs, because it's something that I used to do regularly at the beginning of our shows, and I don't do it anymore. It's madness. So I want to plug the fact that we've got, you know, Twitter or X, if you really want to call it that, and we've also got Facebook, and we've got Instagram. We've also got Threads, although I don't use it ever, and it's just there as a backup, really. Is it if we decide that we cannot deal with Elon Musk's nonsense anymore and we need to come off Twitter? You know, we've got Threads, so follow us there just as a kind of fallback option if you're not already following us on Threads. And also I want to plug the fact that we've got a YouTube channel. We've had a very very good video, did some good numbers in terms of the 100 best wrestlers of all time video that we put out. But also I have decided, for some unholy reason, to start a new series on there where I'm booking WCW from May 2001 on TEW 2020. Give it a look. It's a case of when I post the link for this, or when I posted the link for this on Twitter by the time this comes out, I will probably say something like, felt cute, may delete later. So we'll find out if this even makes the cut. But yeah, I'm giving that a go. We'll see how it goes. It may not, no one may watch it, and I may have to end up just deleting it all so that no one sees, that no one cares about what I've got to say, or see me fantasy booking WCW from 2001. But, you know, hell, it's going to be out there for now.
I absolutely love the sound of that and look forward to tasting the first episode. Tasting the first episode.
It's not a scratch and sniff, Stephen.
That's coming next year.
Guys, I guess now I've done a plug for me and the podcast, of course. Do you want to plug anything?
Alex, do you want to plug anything?
Well, obviously. I'll plug the band again, Idle Promise, on Facebook. We're trying to get 2,000 likes. We've got 1,800 and 70 odd. So Idle Promise on Facebook, and if anyone's around the Northwest, you can check out our gigs and come and see us and come and say hello. Yeah, that's it really.
Again, he's more enthusiastic on the night, I promise.
Yeah, I am. Yeah, I am.
does the 2000th follower get anything?
No.
Okay, well, great incentive there, guys. Follow Idle Promise on Facebook. 2000, they're after it.
Yeah.
Stephen.
I've got nothing really, other than if you just can't get enough of my voice, there are 211 episodes of Mid-South Moments, This Month in Wrestling History, three from other various bits, and I feel like maybe 2025 is a world-class podcast coming along, but I might back out on that in 2025.
He's getting the bug again.
I am, yeah. I do miss it a little bit, but I don't miss it. I miss the recording and putting it together and stuff and deciding not what music and what kind of thing, that sort of thing. But the actual note-taking, I do not miss at all.
You know what I know I would miss about doing this pod is just the sense of accomplishment at the end of a cycle.
Yeah.
Doing an episode, and then you're like, oh, done it. It's done. Yeah, that's great. And it's in there. And now I've got, I don't know, however many episodes there are. And that's what I would know I would miss, is that kind of that thing, which is weird. It's the least kind of interesting part, and yet perhaps the most satisfying, which is strange.
Yes, indeed.
So, talking points today, and there's only one place we can start. Let's be quite clear with ourselves. There's only one place we can start, and that is the result and the main event in general. Of WrestleMania 39 overall. It is Cody Rhodes versus Roman Reigns for Roman's WWE and Universal titles. It lasts for 34 and a half minutes and is won by Roman Reigns after Solo Sikoa hits a Samoan spike on Cody Rhodes. Roman Reigns hits a spear and gets the pin to break the hearts of many, no doubt about it. I was able to remember that entire finish then without referring to my notes once, so I'm pretty happy about that. Pretty pleased with myself. So what I want to do, I want to really break this down. I'm happy for us to spend as absolutely long as we want to on this one, because I do think this is one of the most dominant talking points of any show there's ever been, to be perfectly honest. I think we'd be doing ourselves and the show a misjustice. Why not? An injustice is the word I was grasping for there in the dark. If we didn't cover it with some thoroughness. So let's start with the match itself. Let's get the easy bit out of the way. Maybe that's not easy, and certainly the result may also have impacted your enjoyment of the match. I'm going to start with you, Alex.
Right, okay. So, yeah, forgetting about the results, I think I might say something that might be quite controversial here, but I think that this is the perfect WrestleMania main event in terms of how the match is put together. And every single component of this match just... kind of plays its part perfectly. Cody and Roman, fantastic. The styles really complement each other. Roman, obviously, is very slow and methodical, antagonizing everyone by waving at the Rhodes family. Cody's obviously quicker pace, slightly high-flying. The crowd play their part because they're sensational throughout the match. Paul Heyman, latest inductee into the Hall of Fame, Paul Heyman, is brilliant. Stepping away from the ring when Cody runs the ropes. I love the bit when he's shouts, "Now smash him, my tribal chief." Absolutely fantastic. And Michael Cole, Paul Heyman is worth every penny. Well, ain't that the truth? Speaking of the commentary, now I know Matt slagged off the GOAT, Michael Cole, in the last episode, but I thought that they were sensational here. Some of the quotes that they were coming out with. There was one quote from a one count where they said, he knew he wasn't going to pin the champ, but wanted to send a message. It's little things like that that make it for me. It explains why someone would go for a pinfall so early on in a match, just like, say, to send a message. Explaining that Cody's making mistakes, that he's maybe getting overzealous, just feels real. Look, Michael Cole is the goal, end of discussion. Solo Sikoa and the referee, absolutely fantastic. Solo obviously keep using the weapons, and the referee keeps looking, growing more and more suspicious. And then when the ref hears the belt whip, absolutely brilliant. Throw Solo Sikoa out. The Usos and Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn, excellent inclusion of them. They're perfect. Kind of gets rid of the Usos, and it gives that feeling that there's nothing stopping Cody now. It did make me think that it would have been good if they did a six-man tag match at Backlash instead of what they did with Cody, Owens and Zayn versus Reigns and the Usos. But then the moves, I mean... two count from a crossroads, fantastic. Pedigree from a Superman punch. Superman punch from a disaster kick. A figure four complete with woo! Rhodes breaking the guillotine. The Reigns two count, sensational. And then we get to the end where it's the two crossroads ready for the third, and then the spike from Solo Sikoa. Now, we're not going to touch on them, but we'll talk about the result. But for me, the match, how the match was put together, I thought it was just perfect. It just felt absolutely massive. For me, it's a five-star match. It had everything that I'd want in a WrestleMania main event. It's fairly long, but it wasn't boring. And it just felt massive. Everybody played the part. It's just stunning. Absolutely stunning. Thought it was just, like I said, a perfect WrestleMania main event. One of the biggest. It just felt like one of the biggest WrestleMania main events in history. Thought it was, I absolutely loved it. Absolutely loved it.
Did you quite like it then, Alex?
Mm. It was all right.
Cool. Stephen.
Wow. I mean, I'm just looking at my notes, and you can probably imagine that a lot of my notes aren't about the match, but the match itself, this was real kind of Triple H NXT style main event booking, just all loads of bells and whistles, loads of drama. It was a phenomenal wrestling match. But I can't get away from the peripheral stuff, I'm afraid. Like I really the match in of itself was phenomenal, but there's a problem that we want to talk about in a second. So yeah, I haven't got anything else on the match, I'm afraid.
Yeah, I mean, I think it is a phenomenal match. I think it's a really, really phenomenal match. I don't know if they've ever done a WrestleMania match that's gone 34 minutes other than the Iron Man match, obviously, which was preordained. Mm. I'm not sure they've ever done a match this long at WrestleMania. And if they have, it's not coming instantly to mind. But it didn't feel like 35 minutes, which is what it was. It didn't feel that long. It felt like... In a really good way, or rather, it felt like 35 minutes, but none of it, that didn't hurt at all. You wanted more of it because it was so intensely dramatic. The crowd were just so into this from the very beginning. Talk about big fight feel. This had that big fight feel right from the get go. The crowd were so into it. They were so into Cody winning and beating Roman Reigns. That was a massive, massive thing. And it's that aspect of it that I love most, is that WWE shot for something, i.e. they wanted people to go crazy for Cody and they wanted people to boo Roman, and 90% of the audience are complying with what WWE want them to do. And that's just so refreshing given where we've been for so long. Even really at WrestleMania 38 and 37, there's still this sort of overly split crowd, but they'd built these two guys so well into their characters, into their roles for this match, that I thought that it really made for such a phenomenal atmosphere that you couldn't help but like it, even if they hadn't done what they did in the ring, which was excellent. Even if what they did in the ring was slightly less than excellent, it would still have been a really amazing wrestling match. But then they also did some great things in the match itself to make it a phenomenal match. So as you both know, after the show, not having seen it, I wasn't against the result, put it that way. And as time went on, I liked the fact that Roman Reigns won more, because the further we got away from it, the more I kind of appreciated the chance for them to continue this Roman Reigns storyline. Because I hadn't seen it. And then watched WrestleMania 39 and reviewed that 2 weeks ago, night one. And the atmosphere I got from it was this sort of party atmosphere, the celebratory atmosphere, a kind of atmosphere that, similar to Clash at the Castle, the kind of atmosphere that I don't think we've seen really in WWE since the like of WrestleMania 17, which always feels like the party at the end of the Monday Night War, which I spoke about 2 weeks ago. And that made me question whether or not actually it was the right thing. Because if you've got this really celebratory, party-like atmosphere, is it the best thing to do to have Cody win at the end of the night? The only thing I'll comment on that from now is that given the way the match went, I think the result was wrong. That's what I'll say for now. Let's go to you, Alex.
Well, I mean, I think it was the wrong result. And do you know what? On the day, well, when I watched it, because I watched it the morning after, and I was that was the match that I was invested in the most. So I literally just watched that match because I didn't want to find out the ending. I wanted to watch it. And then when Roman wins, I was flabbergasted, absolutely flabbergasted. And I was that convinced that Cody was winning. I didn't believe it. So I thought, even after the highlights and the fireworks, I was adamant that Triple H or Adam Pearce was going to come out and say Solo Sikoa was ejected from ringside and has caused Rhodes the match, therefore the match will continue. And that I was absolutely adamant. And it's only when it ended, I thought, no, hang on. No, this isn't right. This isn't right. Honestly, I was that certain that Rhodes was winning. And, you know, they've built up Roman Reigns for so long and done an absolutely fantastic job. He's held that title for so long, beating Jey Uso, beat Brock Lesnar, Edge and Bryan, pinned them both, stacked them and pinned them both at the end of 37 night two. Logan Paul, all these people he's beaten. It's just they built him up to be a mega heel. So the only person that can take the belt off him is a mega babyface. And they had it with Cody Rhodes. And he was in AEW as a babyface. He was getting booed, floundering in that company. So he left and came to WWE, did exactly the same gimmick and was an instant hero, like from love from the start. But I mean, just look at the way he's portrayed. Blonde hair, blue eyes, wearing red, white and blue, family man, son of the beloved Dusty Rhodes, theme music that everyone sings along to. He couldn't be more babyface if he tried. And add on top of that his horrific injury and the recklessness of wrestling with that injury. And having that lengthy period off. Now, it's a bit of a side note. Even though it was reckless, I thought it was pretty fucking cool, to be fair. The visual on that Hell in a Cell match. It comes back at the Royal Rumble and voila. The mega heel has a mega babyface competitor. Now, I know that you compared it with Clash of the Castle. And I was one of the ones at Clash of the Castle that thinks that Drew should have won on the night. But after the result and after a while, I actually thought it was the right result, Roman winning. Because Drew winning would have obviously got a pop in Cardiff, but for the it wouldn't have progressed the long-term storyline. It would have been a one-off pop and that's it. And then obviously it introduced Solo Sikoa as well. So Roman winning made sense, but to me, it didn't make sense that Cody didn't win this match. It just didn't make sense. And as cheesy as it sounds, it's like good should overcome evil all the time. Eventually, you know, at the right point, and this was the right point. He was white hot. Absolutely white hot. It's probably not as much, but not far off Daniel Bryan from 30 in my eyes. Not far from Daniel Bryan at 30. Everyone wanted him to win. And following this, I mean, I stopped watching a little bit after this because, again, I was just flabbergasted by the result. And I think Cody did get stale, but I think Roman has done as well. From last WrestleMania to now, he's been nothing like he was before. He has gone off the boil. And they got it back a little bit at Money in the Bank with Jey Uso pinning him, but then fucked it up at SummerSlam with that terrible, terrible ending. So they both just got off the boil. And I wrote these notes some time ago because I watched it a few weeks ago and I put that they're doing a good job on building this year's rematch. But I don't even know you've said, Ben, that I don't think they know what they're doing. And I kind of agree with you. And it won't be, if he wins at Mania XL40 or whatever you want to call it, it will nowhere near be as impactful as it would have done on this match. And I'll be honest with you, I am not convinced that Rhodes is winning. I'm not convinced in the slightest. It wouldn't shock me at all if Reigns wins. Just wouldn't shock me. But I hope I'm wrong. I think the title needs to come off Roman to make him a bit fresh, and the title needs to get uncorded. There's no other person to give it to.
Steven.
Wow, Alex, strong on this, aren't you? And I am as well. I think there's you know where to start here. I mean I think there's lots of moving parts here, because the first thing of all is when you get a babyface to that level, and he was bigger than Drew, and I think perhaps he wasn't bigger than Sammy in the moment, but he's definitely a better long-term pick, I would say, I think, in terms of the front man for WWE. I think you have to pull the trigger, and I think history has shown that when you mess around in these sort of moments, negative things happen. And probably the biggest example of that I can think of is Sting. So Sting, after a year-long build, the biggest pay-per-view buy rate that WCW ever did, and they didn't give him the title. They screwed around with that finish, and it wasn't clear, and it should have been. The obvious thing was Sting wins clean in the middle, 1-2-3. And I thought that was what this should have been on that night. Now, fast forward, we're what, March the 4th here, so a few weeks away from WrestleMania. Cody's still hot. Andy, and it looks like, for all intents and purposes, he's going to be in the final match of WrestleMania weekend against Roman Reigns, and the probability is it's going to win the title. However, I still maintain that road that Roman went on after WrestleMania, he didn't need the title. And I think what Cody did could have been with the title, even if they flipped it back and forth from Lesnar quickly, or don't have him lose one of those matches. The kind of odd spot that they're in now, and this is a little bit dangerous for them, is that on SmackDown, there were some Cody sucks chants and there were some Cody sucks signs, because even though The Rock has turned, what you're asking people to do is make a choice. And diehard Rock fans would have cheered The Rock, and diehard Rock fans would have cheered Cody if they'd both been babyfaces. And actually, this year at WrestleMania, you could have had Roman plow through Jay, maybe have Solo turn and do that, do a match with those two. And then you, then The Rock comes back for Head of the Table, because that's a storyline in of itself that never needed the title in it. And you've got Rock as a babyface, which is what he really wanted to be after all the kind of difficulties he's had in recent times. And you're not pairing Cody off with the Cody against The Rock and allow putting him in a position where people might think and start to question, well, is he really that cool? Is this kind of like, you know, good guy, does the right thing, kisses the kids' heads on the outs on the way to the ring? Does he actually do that? Not sure, but you know what I mean. Is he actually all that cool, or is he a bit lame? Or do I like The Rock talking about his 22 inches of paradise or whatever it was on SmackDown, even though he's supposed to be the heel? So if The Rock continues to perform at that level, and I thought what he did on this, we're dating ourselves a little bit, 2 weeks ago SmackDown, when this comes out, was the best thing he'd done since he's come back. That's a dangerous spot for your top babyface going into WrestleMania and beyond, really. So I still maintain that the best booking is the simplest. Roman had that title for long enough. Time to change it. You don't get into, I don't think you need to get into the murky waters of another world championship and just confusing everything. Cody's around. Cody should have been the champion. And if they don't pull the trigger this year, then I think they'll lose it with him.
So I think the thing for me has always been, I've never felt that it was absolutely necessary that Cody should win. Okay, let me put that out there. And that's always been my thing, is that it's never been necessary that he had to win. But the reason I think the match really pushes you into a position where he should win is that they do everything. So Solo gets thrown out by the referee. Classic. We've talked about this years ago on the podcast about how that's a guaranteed pop every time you do it. No problem at all. Do it, you'll get a pop. And of course, the fans are already going mad. Solo's got previous because of obviously what happened at Clash of the Castle. So everyone's delighted. Solo's been thrown out. So that's one thing you've overcome. Then you've got the fact that the Usos come out and they're battled off by Owens and Zayn. So again, there's another thing that you think could be a roadblock for Cody Rhodes, and he's come through it. Then he does the Dusty Jive and the Bionic Elbow, a symbolic moment for Cody Rhodes because it's his father and not with us anymore. And you put all those things together, and that makes you believe, as a trained watcher of WWE, and I'm not talking about somebody who watches it from the insider perspective, but just anybody knows that those things mean the babyface is going over, because he's done all the things that are significant on the path to winning the big match. He's overcome all the things that have tripped other people up, and he's done this symbolic thing with his father's sort of finish. And that just adds to the anticipation that Cody's winning this match. And then when he doesn't, it's deflating. It's massively deflating. I don't think they needed to do that. I think that there are ways that they could have had Cody Rhodes lose and it still be disappointing, but not deflating in the same way. Because I just think that this sets Cody up as if he's definitely going to win more and more as the match goes on. Now, I'll counter the point you made, Stephen, about Roman didn't need the title and Cody could have had the title after this match. I think Roman did need the title simply because I think they wanted to do the Jey Uso title match in the main event of SummerSlam, and they couldn't do that if he didn't have the title. Simple as that, really. Don't get me wrong, I agree with you, Alex. Bad booking at the end of that match. And it's not bad booking, actually. It's bad storytelling. That's what the problem is. It's bad storytelling. It's like, well, why would Jimmy do that? It just doesn't make sense. But that being said, that's what they wanted to get to at SummerSlam, and they couldn't do that if Cody was champion. Equally, if they had switched the belt, I could have made the same argument to you, in that Cody didn't need the belt when he was facing Brock Lesnar, and Roman could have kept the title. You know what I mean? I don't think it was important that Cody had the belt after WrestleMania, given what they did, and I don't believe it was necessarily bad that Roman Reigns kept the title in terms of what he did after WrestleMania. And I think they've shown, up until the new year, that they were able to keep Cody hot that entire year. Like, the program with Brock went really well. The SummerSlam match, Cody was massively popular against Brock. He's still massively popular. At the beginning of the year, people are going mad for him. He's getting huge reactions everywhere he goes. You've seen him on house shows where he's getting massive reactions from the crowds. And so they've shown that they can keep him as popular as he was going into WrestleMania 39. And they've continued to keep Roman Reigns in a place where people want to see him beaten. They still want him, you know, they still want him to be beaten. And I still feel like he's a really big heel. Like, people still dislike him and they're still up for seeing Cody beat him. I think what's happened since the beginning of the year is that WWE have completely shit the bed in terms of what they're doing. I think what's happened, honestly, and I was thinking about this the other day, is that I don't believe at WrestleMania 39 they knew The Rock was going to be potentially at WrestleMania 40. And I also think that, imagine back in the day before TKO owned WWE. Forget that it was Vince in charge. Whoever was in charge of WWE, if they had approached The Rock, they would have approached him in, say, September, let's say, and gone, how do you feel coming back to do a match with Roman Reigns at WrestleMania? And he would have gone, give me a time to think about it. I'll see what my schedule's like, see what work I've got coming up, and I'll get back to you in 2 weeks' time. He'd have gone back to them. They've talked about it and then gone, yeah, I quite like it. What have you got in mind? And then they would have gone over the plans, and The Rock would have taken it away, probably given it to Brian Gewirtz, and they would have talked about what they should do. And then they'd come back with a counter, and then they've countered it again. It would take a while. And then they'd get to the conversation about payment and how many dates and where are you going to be between January and April? And can I get to those places between January and April? And that's why it would have been so complex. And basically what would have happened is, if by the end of December, all the conversations hadn't finished and everything been lined up, Vince or whoever was in charge of WWE at that time would have gone, OK, look, let's leave it for this year. We've got WrestleMania season now. We've got to start planning for it. And we still don't know whether you're going to be available or what. But when The Rock became a member of the board, almost certainly what's happened is they've gone to him, let us know if you want to do it. Just let us know whenever. We'll tell Triple H to function you in somehow. Because they don't know. They're not wrestling people, the board of TKO. They just own a big old company. And they think The Rock's a massive superstar. So they don't need this massive long line of things that need to line up. They just would have said to The Rock, tell you what, doesn't matter. Whenever you know you're free for WrestleMania, let us know and we'll tell Triple H to factor in that for WrestleMania.
I think, sorry to interrupt, but I think that was part of the deal with the money and possibly the naming rights for him to do a match. Yeah.
Possibly. But the point is that equally, they might have said, you know, at some point we'll do the match, but it doesn't matter when. Like, you just tell us when you're available and we'll do it and we'll factor it in. And The Rock's probably gone, I could actually do it at WrestleMania, and we could do it at WrestleMania. And at that point, Triple H is kind of not in control anymore. But he wasn't to know that at WrestleMania 39. He wasn't to know that. And his plan was always obviously being Cody Roman. At some point, he has found that out. But I still believe there's a way even to go to this year's WrestleMania in exactly the same place and not even do Cody versus Roman at this year's WrestleMania. I think the biggest mistake they made was having Cody win the Rumble. In fact, the biggest mistake they made was in the 2 weeks before that, massively hyping up that Cody would win the Rumble for the second year in a row. The whole video package at the Rumble was about him winning it for a second year in a row. They didn't need to do that. They've got Punk. Punk would have been a more than satisfying winner of the Rumble for people. We wouldn't have seen any kind of backlash if Punk had won the Rumble, for example. Plus, it was believable, I believe, in the run-up to Royal Rumble that Drew McIntyre might have won it, or that Gunther might have won it. There didn't seem to be a really obvious winner of the Rumble until you got to the Rumble and there was all this talk of Cody winning the second Rumble. The minute Cody won the Rumble, though, they had to go to Cody versus Roman. And they still tried not to, which is mad to me. There was no logical storytelling way to get out of Cody versus Roman once Cody won the Rumble. It's simple as that. But I feel like there's a lot of different avenues I'm talking about there. But look it this way. I feel like had The Rock not been available, or had they had the nous to say, actually, Rock, WrestleMania doesn't work for us, or WrestleMania can work for us, but it can't be against Roman, then they could have done this match and gone to Cody versus Roman at WrestleMania and pulled it off fine. Probably not quite as intensely as at WrestleMania 39. I will concede that point. I do think that it's going to be very difficult for them to get to that level of intensity again, but they could have pulled it off. I think that you're right, Stephen. They are making a massive mistake. No matter what The Rock does, having anybody compare him and Cody Rhodes, you're making people choose. Like you said, you're making people choose. You shouldn't be doing that. But I don't think, again, I don't believe that's really Triple H's gift. I don't think he's got
control over that at all. No, 100% not. Yep.
And so I think in hindsight, in order to save us from the mess we're now in, yes, Cody should have won at WrestleMania 39. But I don't believe that there was any reason to believe that at the point that they did it. And I think that they were right in that they could keep Cody hot until this year's WrestleMania, which they had done up to the point where you started to have The Rock and Cody compared with each other. And at that point, he starts to get a little bit hot, less hot.
I think that's really interesting. Sorry about blind smack at us. That's really interesting, godfather of this podcast. Thank you very much. I think the two things for me, like, I always think about, what would you do with Steve Austin? Or what would Steve Austin do? The two things. So if it was Steve Austin in 97, 98, what do you do with him? You have him win, pretty much. And I think in 98, would you have said, actually, what we're going to do is we're not going to have Steve Austin win at WrestleMania because we want to do a match with, let's say, Owen Hart. I don't know how it would turn by then. Ken Shamrock, a number two, sort of number three babyface at SummerSlam versus the incumbent champion. I don't think they do that. So I don't think that it was worth... The Cody thing is a risk. And fair play, they have kept him hot. But history dictates that that's not what happens usually. So I think a lot of this is kind of hindsight. And I'm more okay with them not doing it last year if he gets the title this year. But you're still in a bit of a funny spot with him. And I think the safety option when you've got a babyface like that is the one that I would always, you know, revert to, really.
Well, I think the other thing I want to say about that, though, is the safety option, actually. Because here's the other thing. Let's say you run any company anywhere and you have a product and it sells really well. I mean, really well. You're making great profits. Okay. Record profits for that matter. Record revenue coming through the door as they are now and have been for a couple of years. Let's say it's a type of biscuit. Okay. And a culinary expert tells you, if you change this in your ingredients, it's a better biscuit. Okay. It's a better biscuit, but you're already making a record profits. What's your default decision going to be? Is it, we could make a better biscuit, but potentially lose our profit because we don't know how successful, how that will be received by people. We just don't know yet. Or do we stick with the biscuit that's already making us record profits? And I think this is where I'm a little bit like, the safety option is actually to stay with Roman. You're making loads of money with Roman on top. There's really no need for you to gamble on Cody at a point when you know you've got things you can still give Roman.
Do you know what I would counter that with, though? I think they actually made a load of money with Cody on top.
The thing is, you can think that, but
no. No, hold on. I actually think they have done. They have made a load of money with Cody on top because Roman's not around and Cody's driven the house show numbers, the Raw ratings. He's been on SmackDown a lot. I think a lot of that money is kind of set in stone with the various TV deals.
If that's the case, why did he need the title?
Yeah, I don't think. I think WWE financially now is not in a space where they live and die by. AEW will live and die by their creative decisions in terms of finances over the next four or five years because they can't lose money forever. WWE is in this special place. But I think for me, especially in this company, if you think about what this company's been for 50 years or so, it's been a babyface company. I think their ethos, unlike Crockett, where, you know, it's often centered around Flair as a heel, I think their ethos has always been make the babyface. I can't argue with it from a financial perspective. And actually, if they manage to keep Cody in a place where even 20% of that audience, 10%, 20% of that Raw or SmackDown audience booing him would be catastrophic for him in his babyface run as champion whenever that happens. So if they can keep that down a bit and we can get through WrestleMania and he wins the title and it's all big celebrations, etc., then I'm kind of okay with what happened last year. But I still, if I could wave my magic wand, I'd go back and have Cody win the title on this night.
Is he winning it at 40, do you think?
I think he has to.
Would it surprise you if he didn't?
All I know is that Airbnb I'm in, I'm not getting my safety deposit back if he doesn't win. That hot tub, I'm going to have shit in it right in the middle of it in WrestleMania house.
I 100% agree that he has to win this time. Last year, I would have said there's no need for him necessarily to win the match. And I think actually part of it is, you were talking about Sami Zayn earlier, Stephen. I was more invested in Sami Zayn. It's really that simple. And yeah. I think the fact that he didn't win it was like, well, I don't believe Cody needs necessarily to win it. I wouldn't have been angry about it, but I was like, for me, Sami was a bigger deal winning it than Cody at that point. I think it's easy to forget that now as well, because I think in the weeks after Elimination Chamber last year, Cody turned up to whatever and got more popular with the fans. But for me, it was like, at that point, I was more in on Sami. So I was like, well, if Sami doesn't win it, then I'm not that worried if Cody doesn't win either, to be honest.
I would have been fine with, funnily enough, I did the review of Elimination Chamber with Justine last year, and I do say in that review that I thought Sami should have won the title that night, and then you could have done a three-way at WrestleMania. Whatever happens, you kind of made two baby faces. But for the Drew, for Sami not winning it, you think they're doing it because they're going to Cody, but they just didn't do it. But
they may go to Cody this year, and as I said, original plan may always have been to do that. I would be shocked if he didn't win it this year. I really would be shocked, but completely. It wouldn't be like Undertaker losing the streak, for example, quite, but it would be somewhere near that.
I mean, I 100% agree that I think he should win it. It's just, I've not got faith. I've not got faith that he is. And it goes down to this, and it, you know, it's mainly Vince to be fair.
Oh, do we have to talk about him?
No, yeah. Well, that's it. I'm not going to mention his name again. But they've got this thing where every now and again, right, we're going to swerve you. We're going to swerve you. And that's what I think. And it just wouldn't surprise me in the slightest. It wouldn't surprise me. And it'll be, I'd be really pissed off. Really. I don't think I will be as pissed off as 39 Night 2, because I was just baffled. And now I am kind of not expecting it, but it just won't surprise me. I suppose I've built myself up to it not happening.
Can I ask a question? And yeah. Apologies, Stephen, we are going to talk about Vince just for a moment.
It's all right.
Vince, remember at the time as well, Vince the next night pretty much was revealed as being back effectively.
Next afternoon, yeah. This was a genuinely traumatic, and I've written about my notes, this was a genuinely traumatic 24 hours as a wrestling fan.
Do we think Vince had anything to do with the finish to this match?
I've heard not. For my many, many sources inside WWE, my understanding is not. And actually, going back to something else I meant to say at the time, apparently the plan for this year, so if Rock had done LA last year, they would have made up a new world title. And if the crowd hadn't reacted quite the same way, but there was some blowback, apparently they're going to do an injury angle to take Cody out. And that's how they're going to get The Rock into that match at this year's WrestleMania. So, yeah, God knows. But I think that all, my understanding about the question you asked is that Triple H, this was always the same. So, yeah, that was the plan all along, not a Vince call.
Okay.
After what you said about the match, Ben, and this is just my opinion, but yeah, I think he did. Because like, it was all built up for Cody to win. Like, as you explained earlier, everything was built up for Cody to win. And it's something that you said, Stephen, as well, that I never thought about. It feels like an NXT takeover WrestleMania main event.
Yeah.
And so it kind of says to me that Triple H has booked everything up until the end, and Vince has come on and gone, no, what, Roman? So, yeah, do you know what? In my opinion, yeah. I don't know
where I stand on that question myself, but to be honest, I said at the time, and I continue to say it, is that I've yet to see evidence that Triple H can book a babyface.
Well, this is it. Vince has booked far more happy endings than Jesus. That's
Look back at NXT. Look back at the way things used to end on their takeover shows. There was nearly always a twist in the, or sting in the tail that meant the babyface victory was some, even when they won, was somehow sullied. I mean, goodness knows. For all we know, Cody wins the main event at WrestleMania 40, then Damian Priest cashes in and we get Damian Priest as champion. But, you know, but that's the thing. That's why I'm like, I could see Triple H booking this, because Triple H, I think, is fearful. I think he's fearful of a babyface champion. I think he doesn't know how creatively he can book that going forward. I think he struggles to think, how do I take the babyface as the champion and give them a 3-4-5 month reign, you know, not a massive one, just a one that's satisfyingly long enough that people feel like they got their value for money out of that babyface. And I just don't know if he knows how to do it.
I bet we're going to say the same thing. Like, he obviously had a bit of a sway in his own creativity in WWE, and he was brilliant heel, absolutely fucking fantastic heel, and a shit babyface. Terrible babyface. So, mate, yeah, I think we were going to say the same thing, though.
In terms of not having Cody go to the main event of WrestleMania this year, so, for example, if they were in a position where they were in a bind, they had to do The Rock, because The Rock deemed that was what was going to happen, or the board deemed that was going to happen. And I don't want to, you know, I think it's easy for us to be angry at The Rock, but I don't really think that's appropriate. Like, The Rock is still The Rock, right? He's still one of the biggest stars in the world. And you can understand, if you're in that position, being like, I don't care about Cody, like, it's Cody, like, you know, I'm The Rock, you know, he's Cody, great, they've got their story, they can do that another time. I'm old, I'm in my 50s, you know, like, do me now, and then Roman Reigns can beat me, and you can do Cody at SummerSlam, like, stop whining about this, it's not a big deal. So I don't want to like bitch on The Rock at all. I don't think that's fair, to be honest, and I don't think it makes sense. But if they're in a position where that was deemed the case, the way I would have done it is just not had Cody win the Rumble. But I'd also had it so that at that point you set him up for something else. So for me, the way to do that, or the way I thought about doing it, was have Roman, prior to the Rumble, be worried enough about Cody that he convinced Jimmy and Solo to enter the Rumble specifically to eliminate Cody Rhodes. So then you're maintaining the fact that Roman does not want to face Cody, no matter what. That's the one he's really worried about. So you keep that in everyone's mind. Solo and Jimmy get eliminated, but maybe Solo goes backstage, grabs Cody Rhodes' wife, brings her out and threatens to Samoan spike her if Cody doesn't eliminate himself. And Cody does it because he doesn't want to see his wife get hurt. And then you basically you've now built a very personal issue between Cody and Solo that you can build into the fact that Solo was the one who cost him the title in the first place 1 year ago and have them face each other at WrestleMania. Now, don't get me wrong. It's not Cody winning the title. I still think you build him up to SummerSlam or hell, fucking Money in the Bank. Like, just do it another pay-per-view. I don't see the issue with it needing to be at WrestleMania. I really don't.
100% agree.
But you need a way for his character to be distracted. And that's the biggest problem they had with him winning the Rumbles. There's nothing after he wins the Rumble that can make him distracted from it.
I mean, I really like that creative, Ben. And as you were about to sort of say that, I thought even you could have done something in the Rumble where he just loses. And then even in the Elimination Chamber, who did Logan Paul come back in and Randy Orton? Do that with Cody. Cody and Logan Paul would have been okay at WrestleMania. Something like that would have been fine. But that would have put a little bit more excitement on the Australia show as well. So yeah, I think the Cody winning, once Cody's won the Rumble, he's got to win the title at WrestleMania. There's no other way of doing it than that. And to be fair to The Rock, whatever conversations happen in the background, he recognised in the space of a weekend, I've got to turn here, and that we need to give him Cody, because he's on the board, so obviously he wants what's best for the company. And they turned around and they're going to give us what we want. And I actually think that tag match is, I'm quite excited about that. I know that's got a bit of a mixed reaction, but I think that's a pretty special match with some significant stakes at the end of that. And I think that'll be a fine night one. And they've sold all the tickets anyway. So, you know, I think it'll be good.
Just going back to regards to Cody winning at Mania. And again, it's opinion and it's probably the fact that he didn't win on 39 night two. I think it should be at Mania. I think it should be at Mania. And I think it's because he should have won it at Mania. He should have won. There's no kind of, if, as far as I'm concerned, there's no ifs and buts about it. He should have won it on 39 night two. Mm. And because he didn't, for me, if he wins it on Payback or SummerSlam or King Crown Jewel, for me, it'll just be like, right, yeah, okay.
The reason I disagree is that those pay-per-views in now don't feel like they used to. Like, I really, going into, was it Payback last year, whatever Backlash may be, in Puerto Rico, felt really special. The crowd were incredibly hot. It just felt like a really special event. Money in the Bank felt really special. The London crowd were just immense. You know, SummerSlam was massive. The stadium was huge. It doesn't feel the same as it used to. Like, it doesn't feel like it's in an arena of 10,000 people. And even the locals can't be bothered to turn up for it. Like, people are turning out in their droves to see any pay-per-views at the moment. And so for me, that's why I don't see the issue with it needing to be WrestleMania. And I think actually WWE's attempt right now is to make all of those events feel special. So what's the best way of establishing, say, a second WrestleMania in the calendar, like SummerSlam, for example, by having something this massive happen at SummerSlam? I think it builds into that too. So I don't know, I think there's a bit of a self-fulfilling prophecy with WrestleMania. It's like, oh, it's WrestleMania, so he's got to win at WrestleMania. And I
know where you're coming from, Ben. I think you put a match on, whatever it is, whether it's I don't think they'll do Cody versus The Rock, because I am of the belief that WrestleMania weekend will end with The Rock as a babyface. But then you could do Rock and Roman. That's probably the match, actually. If you said, right, SummerSlam's going to be at Allegiant Stadium in Las Vegas or somewhere, or MetLife Stadium, and it's Rock, and they announce it the night after WrestleMania, it's Rock versus Roman at SummerSlam, they would sell a shitload of tickets, 50,000, 60,000 tickets, hugely inflated prices. But you're going to sell all those tickets for WrestleMania next year anyway, because it's got WrestleMania on the thing. But those things, a bit like Cash at the Castle, I mean, that was a bit of just the fact that we hadn't had one for a long time. But I do think they built that quite nicely, and they sold quite a lot of tickets in the last few weeks for that. And I think that's attributed to the promotion of Drew versus Roman. So yeah, I'm cool with that. And I think they should make an attempt to make those other, you certainly SummerSlam and Survivor Series, bigger than they have been in recent times,
I
would say.
It's the counter to the thing that everyone says, oh, they do too many PLEs or pay-per-views. No, every one of them now special. And they do less, actually. They do like 10 a year now. It's not 12 anymore. And they're nearly all of them are now in stadiums. And where they ordinarily wouldn't be, they go to Australia and put them in a stadium and have them go mad for it. You know, and not even Sydney. or Melbourne, but Perth. You know what I mean? Like, it's, they are truly trying to hit an international fan base now. And they were never going to do it in Australia, but the, for me, it's fine to do it elsewhere. But now they've done it, Cody has to win. I totally agree. Cody has to win. There's another way to have had it where if they were going to... Sorry, I'm going into more of this, but I find this really fascinating because I do think there's a way to tell the story where Cody faces Roman a second time and loses. But it hinges on this first match not being the same. So I've always said that if before this match... So the alternative for me to the way they put this match together to make this result seem more palatable is if the Roman Reigns before the match had told Heyman, Sokoa, and the Usos to not get involved in this match. They have a completely clean match, but Cody loses in the same way as Drew McIntyre lost to Seth Rollins early in the year on Raw, where McIntyre had Rollins beat, but he was too close to the rope and Rollins' leg just happened to flail over the rope. So it was basically a kind of unlucky or mistake, if you like, by Drew McIntyre that meant he didn't win. And that would have allowed you to come out of WrestleMania with two things. You could have told the story of Cody going, I know I can beat him now. I went into that match not absolutely certain that I could have beat him because I've never been in the main event of WrestleMania. I've never fought for the Universal title. I've never faced Roman Reigns. Now I have, and I know I can do it all, and I'm going to go and do it all. Just like we all do in our life. Like, I remember when I passed my driving test. In fact, I remember when I failed my driving test for the third time. But I came out of that failure going, I can do that. That was, I know exactly what I did wrong. I felt so super confident after that third time. The next lesson, I was like, this is clicked. This is so simple. And I don't even know how. But just in the midst of failing again, I realized that I could do it. And in the meantime, the character story you can take Roman Reigns on is going into WrestleMania 40 is, at WrestleMania 40, you can then come out with Solo and Paul Heyman. And the commentators can actually react and say, well, that's significant because last year he told them to stay in the back. This year he knows Cody can beat him. And that's why he's got the insurance of Solo and Paul Heyman this time. And then you can have Solo and the others help Roman Reigns win, which means you can then build to a third match. I don't want them to do that, obviously, now because they booked the first match the way they did. But I do think there was a way to even tell the three matches story if they wanted to. They just didn't, they couldn't have the match be like this. And that's the thing, going back to WrestleMania 39, for me, it's just the way the match is booked made everyone too much anticipation for Cody Rhodes to win because everything they did built that narrative that he was going to. Right. Well, we spent 55 minutes on that, which I did anticipate.
Just one quick thing that I've missed out. Cody Rhodes' entrance theme, My Kingdom by Downstate. I wrote here, I love it. I bet Matt loves it. I bet Ben hates it.
I don't hate it. I mean, it's a good wrestling theme entrance.
Oh, I love it. It's
obviously, great. People sing along to it and stuff. Mm. I wouldn't choose to listen to it in my spare time. Don't get me wrong. But I don't hate it.
I love it. I absolutely love it. Yeah.
I've got it on my playlist and it come on in the car. And Heidi's got her own playlist on my phone and she wanted it on it. So it's on Heidi's playlist.
Do you guys want to know something a little bit dark about Cody Rhodes that I've got my very good friend and co-host Dan, and hopefully he might make an appearance on this show at some point. I did tell him that you reached out, Ben, to everyone and he didn't respond, so that was good. He said to me about I can't remember when it was now, it might have been 2 years ago, he said, I don't really get Cody Rhodes. And I'm like, do you know why that is, Dan? It's like, why is that? It's like, because you're not part of the Dead Dads Club. And he's like, oh, right, okay. So it's like, and I really like the line about when my father told me when I was younger in it. So that always kind of makes me feel a little bit emotional. So yeah, I love it. I just love Cody. I wouldn't say one of my all-time favorites, but I just buy him. Like a bit like Danielson. I wouldn't put Danielson in my top sort of five or six of all time in terms of my favorites. Obviously, he's the greatest wrestler of all time. But yeah, I just buy him and I buy Danielson and I really like him and I want him to be a success.
I think he's done tremendous work as a big business. And I think you buy him and I buy him because this is who he really is. I think this is the person he is. He just he comes across as being entirely genuine when he cuts his promos. And I think that's because he is. And I think in AEW, it got booed because it comes across as a little bit overly sentimental or a bit overly... God, my words today are ridiculous, but like I think it comes across as saccharine sometimes, but that's because that's who he is, and I think that was the problem in AEW, but I think his work's an absolute dream, if you'll excuse the pun, in WWE.
Like a bit self-indulgent, maybe.
Yeah, maybe. AEW.
I mean, I don't watch AEW. I've kind of watched a little bit, and I was watching it a little bit when he was getting booed, and it's exactly the same character, same music, same look, the lot. And it completely, like, I can't get my words out either.
I do argue, though, that WWE have just have utilized him much better than AEW.
Yeah.
But the other thing as well is that there's no Brandy stuff. And I think the Brandy stuff in AEW was always really strange. Yeah. Like, they talked about a Brandy verse and Cody verse, like they were, and that hasn't happened, and there's a reason they've not used her, because I suppose in WWE they'd have more control, but she had, you know, creative influence and that stuff, and it just didn't work. I think that all fed into a bit of a perfect storm. Didn't really like his story that he couldn't challenge the world title again. I think that was, you know, you kind of knew what you were getting with Cody. He was the kind of underneath guy that someone might beat for a secondary title or whatever. So yeah, it just didn't work in the end.
Am I right in thinking that Cody was a face, Brandy was a heel, but Brandy was a face when she was with Cody?
That pretty much, yeah, pretty
fucking
much.
What, I mean, yeah. That, well, what's that tell you?
That's when AEW was good as well.
Fucking hell, that's just ridiculous. Stupid.
The word anyway. I was looking for earlier on was sincere. Overly sincere.
Yeah, yeah.
And he is, and that's because that's who he is. That's why he's so sincere, is that I think he genuinely does believe this stuff and think of this stuff. And I think it's just been kind of drilled into him by, this is what, you know, even if it was drilled into him by Dusty when Dusty was pretending to be someone, like, I feel like that's how it's kind of bled into who Cody is in real life. Perhaps Dusty's character has bled into how Cody handles himself in real life. So, yeah, I mean, look, I'll say this. My last note was, great match in the end, super heated, dramatic. Really difficult to say if Roman really should have won, but I did feel personally disappointed watching it back now. So I don't know if that tells you that he should have won or not, because I guess it depends what the balance is between feeling disappointed from a invested in character perspective, or feeling disappointed with the product WWE have given you, and where the line is on those two things, and whether there is any line, I suppose. So we'll take a break. I think that will do our first half of the show. We all need to, you know, blow our noses and goodness knows what else, I'm sure. We'll come back and cover all of the rest of the show in order after the break.
Man, WrestleMania Goes Hollywood Night 2 has already delivered so many special moments, including the one we're about to have right now. So without further ado, please welcome your Raw Women's Champion, the EST of WWE, Bianca Belair. Oh, Bianca, congratulations. How did it feel to go out there in front of over 80,000 members of the WWE Universe and successfully defend your Raw Women's title?
It felt amazing. I can't put it into words, but I mean, this means everything, everything. I mean, defending this title for the past year hasn't been easy, but, you know, I've had the opportunity to, you know, go against some amazing women, and, you know, Asuka, she took me to my limit, and missed the side. She's an incredible fighter, and you know, in there tonight, it was times that I felt like I couldn't get back up, but I had to remember that this is my dream, and I've done it once, I've done it twice, and tonight I was three-peat. So you know, I'm riding for those that have been riding for me, and we're gonna keep doing this. I'm the EST WWE, and I am still your Raw Women's Champion.
Well, listen, so many people are clearly riding for you, and including some very special ladies who are joining us right now. We saw them out there in interest.
Right, welcome back. And we have now got the rest of the show. We've covered the main event. We've got everything else to talk about on WrestleMania 39 Night 2. Starting with America the Beautiful. This time, Jimmy Allen, who? Another NAF backing track. Actually worse than the one used on Night 1, I thought. And it gets dramatic halfway through. Thought it was going to turn into a Rocky IV training montage briefly. This was not for me. Put it that way.
The best part of this is the cameraman did like a spin around, and then there was some producer desperately trying to get out of shot, and it didn't happen. But yeah, the singing was very average, I thought.
Yeah, terrible. I didn't like it at all.
And it was just also the backing track was terrible. It was really cheap and tacky and nasty.
Yeah, much better when it's instruments in it. Much better.
Sorry, Ben, can I just bring something out while I remember it? Well, because I was listening to last week's excellent episode while commuting today. I think you need to write us a WrestleMania cold open that we all do and record for the final WrestleMania. I think you could do a great job. I'm very happy to have lend a hand in that. But I think that would be an immense way to end the final podcast.
I'll try and put something together. If you've convinced me that's a good idea.
Yeah.
Then we get the intro video, funnily enough, with Kevin Hart, much like WrestleMania 38, more sequel nonsense. I've not been a fan of Kevin Hart's stuff here. And this was, as I said, last 2 weeks ago. This is just a repeat of what we saw the year before, really. Then we get the Miz and Snoop Dogg introduced once again as the host of WrestleMania. Apparently, Snoop Dogg's main responsibility as host is to say, "Can we just fire it up?" Which, to be honest, right, is not very much different from when Cyndi Lauper says, "Girls just want to have fun." Oh, no, not Cyndi Lauper, Wendy Richter, I should say.
I mean, I wondered whether this could be my new catchphrase on the show, because obviously we've got rate and review, Remember Ken Patera, but could we have, what was it, "Can we just fire it up?" Because that's better than the old that we had for a couple of weeks. See, Matt's got something as well, hasn't he? So maybe we'll see on the next one, if I remember.
Yeah, okay, I look forward to that. So then we had match number one, a match that goes just under 5 minutes between Brock Lesnar and Omos. Brock Lesnar hits an F5 and gets a pin, and that's the end of the match. Now, cage match doesn't allow match ratings for matches that go under 5 minutes. So we're saved the low rating that I'm presuming they would have given it. What are we saying? Let's start with you, Stephen.
It's an awkward start, isn't it? Bit of an awkward start. Now, here's a question for the panel. We now live in much better times where many awful things that people used to say regularly are rightly left in the past. However, I want to ask both of you, very, you know, good men, very good men with good morals, as to whether the word tramp stamp could be said in 2024. Because every time I see Brock's lower back tattoo, I can't help but think of those words. Are you allowed to say that?
I mean, no, I don't think so.
Well, let me start by saying that there are very few things that you're actually not allowed to say. Like, and what I mean by that is that I'm not saying that you wouldn't get significant backlash for saying them, but no one's going to arrest you for saying those things. Myth around supposed against free speech is you've still got free speech. You can still say practically anything without getting arrested for it. But that doesn't mean that you are free of the consequences of that speech. So, first of all, yes, you can say it, Stephen, but no one's going to think highly of you after having said it.
Can I just make a point? That wasn't me trying to turn into Andrew Tate on this podcast either, I should just say. I just wasn't sure if that was still a thing that you could say, because obviously that was a thing that people would say about that particular placement of tattoo back in the day. Swiftly moving on. I thought this exceeded expectations, to be honest, and it was everything it could possibly have been and a bit more. And I suspect this might have been Lesnar's last ever WrestleMania match, probably. And I hope that the former Sable gave him a big old shot to his beastie bollocks when she read that lawsuit.
Well, it's an absolute waste of Brock Lesnar for a kickoff. When I was
Alex, it's not on the kickoff, mate. It's on the main show.
Oh, right. Oh, I thought it was on the kickoff. Oh, I've gone wrong there. Anyway, I looked at the Andre the Giant Battle Royal contenders to see if there would have been anyone better. And Johnny Gargano, I think, would have been. I mean, I do like it when Brock Lesnar fights little guys because he just chucks them about, and it's like he did with AJ Styles and Daniel Bryan. So I've got Johnny Gargano, Butch or Pete Dunne, Bronson Reed. I think that those three that I picked out from the Battle Royal, that if they built up a bit of a story, it would have been a better match than this. Brock looks dead happy, but that's probably because he's fucking off in 10 minutes.
Think how much you've been paid for this as well.
I know.
Yeah, do you think it's seven figures?
Oh, he's a happy Brock. Not even 10 minutes work. The match itself, I agree. Do you know what? It wasn't that bad. Credit where credit's due. Omos has improved since 38 Night 2. Brock's selling is incredible, like it always is. It was a bit of a carbon copy from the match against Lesnar. F5 for the win, and Brock is done for the night. Not bad at all, actually. Not bad at all.
You mean the match against Lashley?
What did I say?
I just wanted to clarify because I felt the same, and yeah, and to the extent that I was tempted to give Brock Lesnar my MVP because much like Lashley, he just worked for the nearly 5 minutes that he actually did work. He worked bloody hard to do what he could do against Omos. Threw himself all over the place. I always find it fascinating when you see, as I said before, a guy like Brock Lesnar who literally doesn't take moves like a suplex, for example, or really ever a slam, suddenly in the position where he has to. It must be so strange. It probably is quite quite scary because he never comes off his feet. Like he just doesn't. Like he doesn't. Like maybe he does a couple of times the German suplex, but in the main, it's pretty controlled. It doesn't usually go up in the air at all. So yeah, I find that. But it was fine. Yeah, I agree totally. It was everything it could possibly have been given who was there. Fans enjoyed what was a typically one-dimensional match, but you know, when it's this good, I'm happy with it. It's perfectly fine. I feel like they were working a little bit here with a template from WrestleMania 39 Saturday, in that this was kind of like a big name against somebody new, and they'd done the same the first match of the night one with John Cena and Austin Theory, and then they had the Fatal 4-Way Tag Team match afterwards, which was the same as the night before as well. It just felt like it felt like Triple H was happy with this lineup of matches and thought, I'll just do it again. So match number two is the Fatal 4-Way Tag Team WrestleMania Showcase, of which there was lots of conversation about last week, or 2 weeks ago, I should say. This one featured Ronda Rousey and Shayna Baszler against Chelsea Green and Sonya Deville, against Liv Morgan and Raquel Rodriguez, against Natalya and Shotzi. A match that went 8 minutes, 23 seconds, and was won by Ronda Rousey and Shayna Baszler when Ronzi applied an armbar. Ronzi? Rousey applied an armbar. God, I can't speak. When Rousey applied an armbar to Shotzi for the submission win. Alex.
11th WrestleMania for Natalya. And off the top of my head, apart from this one and the tag match at 37.92, I haven't got a clue. I couldn't tell you about any of her other matches.
This WrestleMania, surely at 25.
No. I'm assuming she was in that. But
Battle Royal. I'm making an assumption too. I don't know.
The other one as well is, I don't know whether they're counting the Vince McMahon Bret Hart match from 26 as well, which, because she was at ringside for that. But anyway, Ronda Rousey and Shayna Baszler have no business anywhere near this. But again, what else do they do? This is completely different to the men's showcase from the night before, which was exceptional. But nobody cares. No, I mean, the match on night one, even that match itself is fantastic, but I seem to remember the crowd being really hot for that match, but nobody cares with this. But that being said, again, this isn't too bad. A lot better than I thought it was going to be. Some decent double team stuff from Chelsea Green and Sonya Deville. I do like the double sharpshooter spot as well. But Ronda Rousey and Shayna Baszler are hardly in this match, and I don't know whether Shayna Baszler got injured in it, because she was selling some sort of injury. From memory, I think it was her arm. I can't remember now, because it was a couple of weeks since I've watched it. But they're not involved at all, and then coming at the end and pick up the win. So I don't know whether Shayna Baszler got injured or was injured at the time. I don't know. But anyway, that being said, not a bad match at all, but just a bit of a waste of them too, especially Shayna Baszler.
Something so satisfying about the way Alex says Shayna Baszler.
I can't
put my finger on it. It's a very, I don't know, it's quite a wordy name for a northern accent.
All right.
So it kind of like really shows off the accent nicely. It's good. Anyway, yeah, sorry, Stephen.
I really enjoyed the conversation last week about exhibition / showcase match, but I feel like it's okay to have this stuff, especially on a two-night WrestleMania when you've got an eight-hour show, really. So why not? And I think also with regards to the break thing, though I'm not necessarily an advocate of that normally, I don't have a big problem with that. Again, when it's two shows, I think it's okay to give something like 10 minutes. It's a bit throwaway. If people want to stand and watch it, it's good fun, whatever. However, I am terribly sorry to all the listeners around the world listening to this podcast, looking for some expert analysis from pro wrestling's least favorite Herb about this match. But alas, some life admin got in the way, and my car was in for servicing on this day. And due to my complete lack of practical knowledge to help me in my day-to-day existence and staying alive, I live in constant fear of being ripped off when dealing with car garages or work people that ever come into our house. Therefore, I spent the majority of this match poring over my service invoice, looking at the words, not understanding things such as an engine flush or pollen filter replacement. Does my poor car suffer from hay fever? So therefore, once all of that was done, I looked up and Ronda was tapping out Shotzi. I've written shots, and I realised I've missed the whole thing. So sorry, Ben. I can only apologise to you for this, but ultimately, 5 stars.
Why don't you, especially when it comes to a service of your car, surely the obvious thing is to take it to like a chain of some kind where the people there have got absolutely no incentive to rip you off.
Well, that would involve dealing with people. So I use a, are we allowed to do plugs on the show?
Why not? We do plugs for everything. Why not?
So I use a service called Servicing Stop, which means that I don't have to interact with very many humans. So they basically...
I want to know about this because this is right down my alley. I don't want to talk to anyone either.
So basically, you don't even know what garage it goes to. So you put it in, you put your registration number in and pick what you've got. And generally speaking, the servicing in the MOT is cheap, but then they get you with the add-ons, but you don't have to say yes to that. So I thought, I will this year, but I won't next year. So they literally come to your house or wherever, pick your car up in the morning, take it away. You get a report through, and then someone phones you up and says, you're happy to do this work? You say yes or no, and they do the work, and they drive back at the end of the day. And you never have after any interaction with humans other than the person that picks up the car. Then when they drop it off, which is like, if it's 10 seconds, it's too long, and they've got on the phone. So yeah, I highly recommend it.
But it does beg the question why you, as someone who lives in fear of being ripped off, would do that. Like, when it's almost seemingly completely anonymous, like, surely it would make a lot more sense just to go to Halfords and get them to do it.
Yes, Ben, I live in fear of awkward human interactions far more than I do being ripped off. So that's the other thing, basically. So yeah, it's just an anxious existence for me.
It sounds like it.
I just take mine to West Orton MOT Centre. Been there ages, they know me.
No Perhaps problem. You can do me a recommend. I'll drive. It's only about 4.5 hour drive out there. So yeah, let's go.
I even had a brake light out the other week and I took it and they didn't charge me.
Just lovely stuff. It.
And they went, I said, how much? They went, nothing. I went, bloody hell.
Wow. I mean, I'm very impressed.
As if to accentuate the thing we've been saying about the women's tag team division for the last 2 months or whatever. Here you've got four teams completely thrown together. And in particular, Natalia is now teaming with Shotzi Blackheart. Give her full name. Let's remember that. At WrestleMania 38, she was with Shayna Baszler. And at WrestleMania 37, she was with Tamina. She's had a different tag team partner the last 3 years at WrestleMania. Looking forward to her teaming with, I don't know, Naomi probably at WrestleMania 40, I should imagine. Yeah, what a mess. Come on, get some fucking tag teams together, guys. Get yourself sorted out. There's loads of women on the roster and loads of them doing nothing. Like, this shouldn't be hard. Get some people, get some matching outfits, give them a team name, keep them together a long time, get them kind of developing a little bit of chemistry, a little bit of double team, you know, action. Get this sorted. It's not that hard. You've got people doing nothing. Give them some tag team fun and just get it done. It was not particularly good. Talking about Brock Lesnar and how much he made for such small amount of time doing any work at this show, Ronda Rousey does nothing but put someone in an arm lock in this match. That's pretty much all she does. Shayna Baszler is involved in the match a bit. Ronda Rousey does that at the end and wins it for them. Per second of effort, I think Ronda Rousey's winning here in terms of the money stakes. I can't imagine anybody else is making off with quite such a efficient paycheck at the end of this show. Then we get a hype video which talks about the rise of the Judgment Day following the ditching of Edge and their addition of Dominic Mysterio. Then we see Beth Phoenix being attacked by Rhea Ripley. This is all to be repeatedly thrown on in the night as well before the match between Edge and Finn Balor. Then we get some highlights of night one of WrestleMania, and then we also see some highlights of the Andre the Giant Battle Royal on SmackDown, which Lashley wins, last eliminating Bronson Reed. I was trying to find who was in the Battle Royal, and I couldn't find the names, but I imagine there probably wasn't anybody that would have been better for Brock Lesnar than a Ross, to be honest, given what was left, given how little build, for example, Johnny Gargano had at that point.
Mm.
Lashley is then introduced to the live crowd and comes out with his trophy. I mean, when was this a thing? The Andre the Giant Battle Royal Memorial winner coming out in front of the crowd and showing off his trophy with a suit on? What's that about?
Surely this is the bit where you go for a piss, not during the showcase match, isn't it?
Maybe. We then see Xavier Woods on the set of Up, Up, Down, Down, and they say they simulated the IC title match 100 times on WWE 2K23, and Drew McIntyre wins 42% of the time. They did the same thing on night one with another match, and I thought, that's a relatively creative way of advertising WWE 2K23, as opposed to what they usually do, which is just give you an advert for the game. So I didn't mind it too much.
I didn't see any of this. I'm sorry. I think I might have been doing something else.
Worried about your car.
Yeah, I don't know what I was doing. I've got no notes about that whole section, so God knows. Yeah, no idea.
I thought it was awful. I thought it was really cringy, with the exception of Nikki's scream at the end. But no, I didn't like it at all.
Then we get another hype video, this time for Gunther's record-setting IC title reign. We see Sheamus having won everything in WWE except the IC title. We see Drew calling out Gunther but Sheamus confronting him instead. We see a number one contender match between McIntyre and Sheamus that was interrupted by Imperium, and it resulting in a double DQ, and then Adam Pearce making a three-way for WrestleMania as a consequence. This was the same booking that they did to set up the four-way at the Royal Rumble this year, which was basically with the Bloodline coming out and attacking all the participants in the three-way number one contender match, and the exact same thing happening, and therefore they commissioned the four-way. Adam Pearce has got previous. So, Titus O'Neil is then introduced to the crowd as the guest commentator for this bout. It is Gunther, Sheamus, and Drew McIntyre triple threat match, which lasts 16 and a half minutes and is won when Sheamus hits another bro kick, but Gunther breaks it up from the top rope, powerbombs Sheamus onto McIntyre, then powerbombs McIntyre and gets the pin to win. Steven.
So this was one I was definitely going to be paying attention to. I even got myself a little pre-match coffee and I had a little wee as well. So I'm like, I'm ready for this triple threat match because I remember this being very good. Titus was on guest commentary and he had an incredible line after a Gunther chop on Sheamus where the camera focused on him. He winced out of his skin and said, "Someone call the police, please," which popped me hard. Strong consideration for MVP of the night was the big bogey sticking out of Sheamus' right nostril after Drew broke up a post-bro kick pin on Gunther. I thought this was really strong. I mean, perhaps 16 and a half minutes. I think this probably could have done another 5 minutes. And then really, really legitimately could have been considered right at the top of all-time WrestleMania matches. As it was, this is certainly in the mix. I thought this was really, really, really great.
If you're going to play a drinking game with how many times Titus O'Neil said, "Call the police," five shots you'd be on.
You said, oh, really? Five times? Okay.
5 times throughout the night. Right, I mean, first of all, the video package with the orchestra and the voiceover, like, really different, and I absolutely loved it. One nitpick with regards to it is, why is there a video of Sheamus and Drew McIntyre cheersing each other with lemonade before they have a fight? And they show that twice. I mean, I get it with these adverts and these sponsor things, but just doing better. It annoys me. Just takes me out of it. It just does me head in. Anyway, the Random Wrestling Review Intercontinental Championship Bracket Mania runner-up is such a big deal. His entrance is superb. And for me, he is the next longest reigning main champion. I just think he's absolutely fantastic. The work that he's put in with regards to this title. And again, it's a big fight and it's because of Gunther. It's a massive fight and it's because of the work that Gunther's put in with regards to that title. The match itself, I mean, well, it's superb, isn't it? Absolutely superb. I mean, they're not holding anything back. It's Chop City. Drew McIntyre's right hand is red as fuck. It looks like King Charles's hand with all the chops that he's doing.
Poor King Charles. Get well soon, King Charles.
Yeah, get well soon. Yeah, definitely.
Our WhatsApp group shares that message, doesn't it? Of all of the guys, definitely. Yeah, especially Sam.
Every single one of them, yeah.
Okay.
Sam, you can't say that about Sam, Ben. That's out of order. Anyway, the chops, and I must say, I did think that the chops and the punch and the slaps were getting slightly tedious at one point because it just seemed to just go on and on a little bit. But when that stopped, this was really good. Sheamus and Gunther, crowd are just going mental. And honest to God, that could have been your main event at night one. I don't care what people say, 100%. Crowd are really, really hot, all beating the chests. And yeah, it's just fantastic action, isn't it? Drew McIntyre's flip over the top ropes, incredible. Titus O'Neil thought it was as well because he was going absolutely mental. Crowd are well behind Sheamus. The Claymore's just a cracking finisher, but he's better when it just comes out of nowhere. Splash and then two power bombs for the win for Gunther. It's incredible. It's hard hitting, frantic, exciting. I'm not a lover of triple threat matches, but this was excellent. It is one of, if not the best intercontinental title match in Mania history in my eyes.
We're going to give you some stats here from the man who brought you the top 100 wrestlers of all time. So this match was the ninth best match of 2023, according to Cage Match. It was the 164th best match of all time, according to Cage Match Reviews. And it's the 20th best match in WWE history, according to Cage Match Reviews. And I say all that because I think it's a bit overrated, to be honest.
Ooh.
It's a very good match. Don't get me wrong, it is a very good match. But I do think that the opening seven, eight minutes where they are just smashed, they're slapping the hell out of each other, is a little bit over-performative for me. It's a little bit like, oh, we're just going to hit each other loads. And we're just going to allow each other to hit each other loads. And people are going to eat you up because we're just hitting each other for real loads. And I contrast that with like Brock Lesnar versus Roman Reigns at WrestleMania 31 when they are smashing the shit out of each other. But it doesn't feel performative. It feels like they're doing it in the pursuit of trying to win the match. Here, it doesn't feel like that. It just feels like a performance, which I know it is, but that's surely the art of this thing that we're talking about, is to make it not look, feel like a performance, and it did. And so that's why I feel it's a bit overrated. I think it's a very good match, and the crowd eat it up. And in fairness, everything they do after that portion, that first half of the match, is excellent too. So I don't want to bury it. It's a very good match. I just think it's a little bit overrated.
Do you want to hear a stat that I'm sure all our lovely hosts will enjoy very much, and I'm sure all of our lovely listeners will as well, because they all hold this person who's the kind of source of this stat in the very highest regard. You ready for it, Ben and Alex?
Yeah, yeah.
Do you know where I'm going, Ben?
About Will Ospreay.
No, it's not about Will Ospreay, even though he had an absolute match of what is bigger than a millennium, match of life.
Surely, Stephen, by Will Ospreay standards, just match of the week, isn't it?
Match of the week. It was very good against Kenesuke Takeshita. All I would say is, if you're a fan of selling, probably wouldn't watch it. So, yeah, it was literally like, we are just going to do everything we possibly can. It was just ridiculous. But, yeah, anyway, I wasn't what I was going to say. Gunther has got more Dave Meltzer five-star matches than anyone in WWE history, and this was rated five stars. I wouldn't have gone as high as that for it. But the Clash at the Castle match was five stars as well, So which is interesting. I'm not as high on him as Dave, but I thought this was really good.
Yeah, well, just to say, the best match in WWE history, even according to Cage Match, was Walter versus Ilya Dragunov from NXT.
Yeah.
And they also did the third best match of all time in WWE history too. So he's had a lot of the very best matches in WWE history, according to Cage Match ratings.
Interesting. So the Cage Match, have you got them there, Ben?
Yeah, I'm looking
at them. What would you mind reading the top five? I'm really interested in that.
The fifth is CM Punk versus John Cena.
Yep.
Fourth is Bret versus Steve Austin, WrestleMania 13. Third is Ilya Dragunov versus Walter. Second is Andrade versus Johnny Gargano.
Yeah, that was incredible.
First is Ilya Dragunov versus Walter again.
How interesting. So Gargano and Adam Cole, which I think was the first. I don't think Gargano and Andrade got five, but I could be wrong. But that was a phenomenal match. But that's not in there. But yeah, Cage Match is a bit different. But I'm interested in that, because obviously that's lots of people that are into rating matches that have seen a lot of stuff. So it's quite a good scale.
The Adam Cole Johnny Gargano match you're talking about, I think, is 44th all time.
Wow, that's really interesting. Yeah, wow, okay. Love it. Love a bit of Cage Match.
Yeah, I don't want to get on this, on this match's case. It was very, very good. You know, really in the top tier of WWE matches you see. I just don't think it was quite as historically good as some people make out that it is.
Was it the chops that did it for you, the bit at the beginning? I thought that was a bit tedious.
I didn't find it boring. I just didn't, as I said, I felt like it felt like a performance.
Yeah.
Which it shouldn't do. That's, against the purpose of wrestling, is for it to feel like a performance. Then we get the video promoting Bianca Belair against Asuka. We see Belair beating Becky Lynch at WrestleMania 38. Bianca saying that the win changed her life. Asuka booking her place at WrestleMania by winning the Elimination Chamber, and then assaulting Belair on Raw. Not a very complex build for this one, and there was some hint at mind games, but I didn't really understand them very much. Asuka's entrance features a series of others wearing her mask, and Bianca's featured a bunch of young girls dancing on the stage with similar hair to hers. They then have their match, which goes for 15, nearly 16 minutes, and it's won by Bianca Belair, when she powers out of an armbar by Asuka into a KOD and gets the win. Alex.
Yeah, another big fight feel this. Another big fight feel. Just want to touch on the entrances. Asuka's entrance, really, really good. There should have been more Asukas. There should have been just shitloads of them for me. Asuka's just off her head, but cool as you like. But Bianca Belair's entrance, love it. Absolutely love it. And I'm not a fan of dance troupes. And when I used to watch... What?
You're not a fan of dance troupes. You put thought into this in terms of, like, in my life, I just don't like a dance troupe. Okay,
I'm going somewhere with it.
Sorry,
now, young man.
Sorry. Right. Young man, I haven't called that in a while. Yeah. Second eldest on the pod.
You're the only one who could say it, though, aren't you, Alex?
I think you're older than me as well, aren't you?
I'm 42. How old are you?
Yeah, I'm 41, yeah. Oh, so, yeah. But, yeah. Yeah, but...
Stephen, you just got promoted. Come on, mate.
God. Yeah.
Anyway.
Granny, actually, yeah.
So I'm not a fan of dance troupes. And when I used to watch Britain's Got Talent, I used to find that they were a little bit tiresome, but I love this. I absolutely loved it. I bet they're having the time of their lives, just full of attitude. Now, I don't know if you know this or not, and apologies, I couldn't actually find a name, but did you know the story about the young contortionist, the young girl at the end that was doing the flips over? So, Triple H was on a press conference and said that she lost her mother earlier that day, which is really, really sad. And to go out and perform like that in front of all those people and millions of people watching, I mean, I couldn't do it. If we had a gig and a member of my family passed away, let alone my own mum, there's no way I'm going out and performing. And she did it with a massive smile on her face. And for that reason, she's my MVP.
Thoroughly. What a lovely man you are. What a lovely young man you are, Alex.
Wholesome Alex shines through again. Yeah.
True that. But she deserves it. I mean, I couldn't do that. I mean, I couldn't do what she were doing anyway. But to do that, yeah, do you know what? She deserves it. So she's my MVP.
That's a very special OnlyFans you doing contortion, Alex. It's a big business.
Oh, God almighty. Well, as well as breathing heavily and saying Shayna Baszler.
Yeah. All boxes ticked.
Yeah. I'll do it all at once. Anyway, the match itself starts at a really quick pace. They're just putting everything into every move. Great reversal from a springboard into a submission move and then another one into an ankle lock. The storytelling's fantastic within the match. They're really getting over the fact that Bianca Belair's just getting really frustrated that Asuka's just countering everything. I thought it was brilliant. And then a great reversal into an armbar, powered up for the KOD for the win. Another excellent match. Really, really good stuff. And the women's championship matches have been superb in the two Night Manias. They've been consistently high quality. I thought this, again, absolutely fantastic, this match. Fantastic.
I mean, I haven't got a lot to add. I thought Alex, summed that up brilliantly. I thought these two were in a really tough spot after that triple threat. And the crowd, they got the crowd and they kept working. And they were really into it by the closing moments, which is, we were talking that that was one of the better matches in WrestleMania history, and these two followed it. And I just thought Bianca Belair, I mean, what a resume of WrestleMania title matches she's got. And it's a real shame that she's, by the looks of things, not going to be featured in one of those title matches this year. But yeah, she's a superstar. Asuka's obviously great. Yeah, really good again.
Yeah, they've got, three, four, five maybe women who are really, really exceptional. And then they've got a lot of not quite there, haven't they?
Yeah. Yeah.
WWE's roster. And the concerning thing is that they're running out of matches with them now. There aren't like so many options as there used to be. They don't have quite the same embarrassment of riches. But I guess all it will take is adding one additional person to that group of really talented women to freshen it all up again. So probably not a major concern for them. And this was proof of that. Yeah, I thought it was really good. I think the only slight thing that offset it in terms of its quality was there was a strange crowd atmosphere for this. I thought it's the first one where I think we've seen a little bit of backlash against Belair, and I don't know what for, I don't know why, but there was definitely not 100% support for her in this one. And this was not a case where she was against Sasha Banks, who is, even if not playing a babyface, certainly a kind of generational kind of star who people would cheer for anyway. She's against Asuka, who's great, don't get me wrong, consistently great, but just not quite at that same star level in terms of those women. So it felt a little bit strange to me. And they did struggle at the start to get the crowd into it, but as you said, Stephen, expertly turned that into a match that people cared about. And that is really the art of wrestling right there, is taking a crowd that isn't really into what you're doing and managing to get them into it by the end. That takes a heck of a lot more work than just having a really hot crowd and riding the momentum of that crowd. That takes a lot more work. So yeah, really, really impressed by the work they did. Very good, but as I said, slightly offset by a slightly strange crowd atmosphere that I wasn't sure why that was happening. Maybe just because that's three WrestleManias in a row where she's won the title match, and I guess people are just prone to backlash against people who are pushed hard, I suppose.
Yep.
So then we get a guy called, is it George Little or George Kittle or something, shown in the crowd. He's the guy who interfered in the McAfee match the day before. And then we get some highlights of the tag title match on night one. Now it's time for the gimmicky segmenty bit of the show. Miz and Snoop Dogg are shown in the ring to announce that the crowd for the night is 81,395. They give a two-night total of 161,892. These are the numbers WWE are dealing in now. Even if they've inflated that number, it's still getting pretty impressive. Miz then turns to Snoop and complains that he put him in an impromptu match on night one while he was wearing a $10,000 suit. Snoop asks if he wants to do it again. Miz says no, says he was caught off guard and that Snoop tried to embarrass him. Miz says he wants an apology and says this is his ring, his city. And Snoop Dogg then brings out Shane McMahon. Shane grabs a mic, thanks the fans for the warm reception, and then Snoop Dogg asks for a ref and rings the bell. We then get what I've written as Shane McMahon versus The Miz versus Snoop Dogg. But I'm not sure it was ever intended to be a triple threat match. Cage match listed as Snoop Dogg versus The Miz. I don't think they intended that either. But anyway, the match starts. Shane hurts himself on a leapfrog, very similarly to the way his dad hurt himself at the Royal Rumble some years previous. Snoop Dogg then gets on the mic, talks smack to Miz and punches him a couple of times, and then delivers a people's elbow, much to the joy of the fans, and pins the Miz. I've written here that the segment was a mess, but credit to Snoop and Miz for just about managing to save it all when Shane McMahon was like badly hurt, seemingly, after doing the leapfrog.
I couldn't remember if this was on this show or night one of WrestleMania. When I saw what was happening, I couldn't believe this was the end for the guy who I think in the 2022 Royal Rumble wanted to book himself at number one and the whole match be a showcase for him. But poor Miz, before the unpleasantness happened, he had to eat a few potatoes from Shane and then down to a combination of too much heavy duty MMA training and a load of delicious roids. His body gave out on him. His quad ripped, much like his wretched cunt father did 18 years before on pay-per-view. And that was the end of Shane McMahon. And as you said, Ben, fair play to Snoop Dogg here, because this was all legit, off the cuff, made up. And I love the fact that Snoop Dogg decided that the way to end this was to drop the people's elbow, entire weight on Miz, elbow first, and I'm sure the old pro Miz wouldn't have wanted it any other way. Yeah, I'm not going to go Shane McMahon's quad as MVP, just in case. I think that because that might foreshadow my own horrific quad injury at some point in the future, but it's very close.
Well, as a quad injury sufferer myself, it's not a nice feeling. I played an 11-a-side match in goal probably about 10 years ago and took a goal kick and my quad just popped.
Oh my God.
And I still have issues with it to this day. It's not nice. So my heart, I can't believe I'm saying this, but my heart does go out to Shane McMahon a little bit.
He's all right. He's not his father, so it's okay.
Yeah, no, that's all right. Fair enough. But yeah, I mean, Shane McMahon comes out. Surely there could have been somebody else, anyone else. But the crowd pop. The crowd love him. I don't know what's going on. It happens every time he comes out. He just gets the crowd going. But yeah, I mean, look, it is what it is. I wouldn't want to see anyone get injured, to be fair. But Snoop saves the day. Absolutely fantastic. I thought Snoop were in this. And he's loving life. Made the best of a bad situation. Overall, I did quite like this. I did quite like it. A bit of a smile on my face, obviously without the injury bit. A nice kind of welcome break from the wrestling. I didn't mind this at all, to be fair. I didn't mind this at all. I'd rather this than squeeze in another match in anyway.
I want to give The Miz his flowers, because I can only assume The Miz did all the calling on the fly, because he's the one who's getting all the moves. He's taking all the moves, right? So I can only assume he's saying to Snoop Dogg, like, knock me down, then do something. I don't care what it is, just do something. So I'm giving The Miz his flowers for the fact that this didn't end up just fading out after Shane had got himself injured. But yeah, credit to them both. I said on the night one show that they could have done without The Miz's match against Pat McAfee, and I think they could have done without this too, to be perfectly honest. But whatever, fine. You know, this is still WWE after all. They're never going to completely get rid of this stuff. Then we get another hype video for Edge versus Finn Balor. This one starts with a brief career retrospective of Edge, then of Finn Balor. Then we see the Judgment Day turning on Edge, Edge returning to take them on, Rhea Ripley delivering a concerto to Beth Phoenix. It's a cool video with a different style to most, I thought, which was nice to see. I'm all about the variety. Then when they come down to the ring, or before they come down to the ring, is it George Clooney doing a voiceover as the Hell in a Cell is lowered for the next match? A question that I had answered after the match when it was revealed that the match was sponsored in some ways by the Russell Crowe film The Pope's Exorcist, which was plugged by the commentators.
Just while we're on that bit, with regards to, I mean, I don't like the sponsorship in matches, but I actually quite like that. I quite liked how they did it as they're lowering the cell and him talking. And then literally at the end, it was just right. Pop Sex, this is coming out. I thought it was quite a perfect use of sponsorship. If they're going to do it, I thought it was a good use of sponsorship.
Agree. If they're going to do it, then this is about as natural as it can be without being silly. Then Edge's entrance begins with him rising from the stage a la the Brood with a silver headdress on, as if he's Scott Steiner or something, and wings. And then Edge's normal music hits and he comes to the ring. Apparently the first music was Slayer, which I didn't know. Would have been better had it been old Gangrel music in my view, but there we go. And then Finn Balor comes out with his old solo music and wearing the demon headdress. We then get Edge versus Finn Balor in a Hell in a Cell match, which is 18 minutes long and won. When Edge hits Balor with a chair multiple times, then sets up a concerto and hits it, then gets the win.
Right, yeah, so touching back on the video package, I thought it was phenomenal. And it just told the story from start to finish. And it really feels like it's the end of a feud. Loved the speech in the background. I thought it was a perfect video package, really, for what it set out to achieve. We've mentioned about the cell being lowered, but it's not red. Thank God we've got a normal coloured cell, not fucking red. Entrances, I thought they were fantastic until the CGI, not AI, CGI tentacles came into play, just ruined it. I wondered what the hell the guys were doing in the background for Finn Balor's entrance, but I think it turns out that they were giving him flares and not distress flares, the type that Suzy Quattro wears. This is another match that feels like a big deal. The match itself is fantastic. Another one, absolutely fantastic. No selling of the chair shot from Finn Balor. It makes absolutely no sense, but I quite liked it. And then this is kind of, I think this might be your fault, this, Ben, because you've said before about the We Want Tables chance, and I've never thought about it. And then I pick up on it all the time now, and it fucking does my head in. Fuck off with the We Want Tables chance, will you? But Edge deals with it by trapping Balor in a cell, but then gets a table. But at least it's the face getting a table and not heel. If Balor got the table, then I'll have an even bigger issue with that. And then there's the issue, the turning point in the match, with when Edge gets the ladder, throws it at Finn Balor, and he gets busted open. Now, first of all, why do they keep showing the replay? There's just no need. Maybe show it once and that's it, but they must have shown it about four or five times. But that being said, the injury added a edgy layer to the match, no pun intended. I thought it gave it a great visual, and it just made it a bit edgier. The missed coup de grace through the table, another great visual. And then the concerto for the win, poetic justice, a perfect finish to the feud. I thought this was fantastic, absolutely fantastic. It's up there for Hell in a Cell matches for me, because it's not too long either for a kickoff, and it hits all the right notes. It established what it set out to do from the start and executed it perfectly. It's incredible stuff. Really, really enjoyed it. Another excellent match.
On the night, this started around 3 a.m. and it's fair to say that by that point I was quite snoozy. I'd already done a podcast covering night one. I'd done a WrestleMania 19 retrospective. I was tired, I was cranky, and I just wanted the main event. I just want Cody Rhodes to be crowned champion, like a baby wants to be cradled in their mother's exceptionally soft bosom. Here's a question for the panel. When Finn, who listeners should know my feline son is partially named after, when he challenged for the titles against Brock Lesnar at Royal Rumble 2019, why did he decide that match wasn't big enough to have face paint on? Sorry, lads, it's only a world title match on the second biggest show of the year. It really does take a long time to wash off. What's that? I've never lost while wearing it. Well, think about what damage it does to my skin. What is that? Why is he wearing it in this and he didn't wear it in that match against Lesnar?
I've got an answer for this.
Go on.
Because Paul Heyman, in a promo, talked him out of doing it and said that you can beat him without the demon.
Wow, okay. Alex.
Why do you need the demon? You don't need the demon to beat Brock Lesnar, and he talked him out of it.
Okay, well, so I'm going to counter this, though, because replace the Finn Balor versus Brock Lesnar match with any other match. If Finn Balor wins with this fucking face paint on, why not fucking wear the face paint every time you win?
Yeah.
Like, it doesn't matter whether he talked out of it for one match. The other matches, come on, wear it for those.
Completely agree. It wasn't too bad for Sting and Ultimate Warrior, was it? I thought Balor's demon gurning was really embarrassing. It's like, you're not a demon, mate. It's just paint. But it certainly got more dramatic after Finn's injury. And the week that I typed these notes, my Finn had the potential for a very significant injury after what we believed he ate a slug in the garden. So his poor mouth was covered in slime and the poor little mite was struggling to swallow. Thankfully, I was out watching Ospreay versus Oku when this happened. So my wife had the job of holding a scrabbling cat over the sink while she wiped slug slime out of his gob, which was, I was glad I was nowhere near that. On the night, I thought this was, now, what do you think about this? I thought in the moment, moment, this was gorier than the network version. Do you think they've edited it to kind of get rid of some of the blood?
I don't know, to be honest with you. I didn't notice that.
It definitely seemed like that they were, there were some awkward camera shots to avoid the blood, certainly.
I seem to have an idea, or I seem to have a memory that the cleaning up the wound took longer than it did.
Yeah, it wouldn't surprise me either.
So, I mean, which I suppose it makes sense to cut that bit down, but yeah, so possibly, yeah, possibly.
But that, it undoubtedly added to the drama, everything. And again, I thought that on the night and watching again, this was good and certainly beat my expectations for this when I watched it the first time around.
This didn't beat my expectations. It was about as good as I expected it to be, which was to say good, but not spectacular in any way. It felt like an Edge retirement match. Through the match, he had the Gangrel music. He did the kill switch, which is Christian's move. Did Gangrel's DDT, apparently, which doesn't differ any way, by the way, to Edge's DDT. They're exactly the same, but he used that too. So it was almost like running through his career highlights as the match went on. And I guess it kind of was, from WWE's perspective, his retirement match, was it not? I mean, did he work again after this? And if he did, it wasn't in anything particularly important following this match. So this was kind of his last big match for WWE, basically. Finn Balor, meanwhile, I've got the note about, like, why is he not, like, what determines why he is the demon and what when he's not? And if the demon is so much more effective than Finn Balor, why isn't he always the demon? But then I guess this is just another miscellaneous mystery gimmick, which they like to do, much like Bray Wyatt, much like Aleister Black, much like others that we've seen as well. I didn't think that the kendo sticks looked very impressive. In fact, I thought they looked like a massive, colourful cotton bud that they were hitting each other with. I also noted that I hated the We Want Tables chant, and I just felt like this match is my issue with Finn Balor, is that I think he's quite functional, but that's it. I don't really get anything else from him. I don't think of him as a particularly strong worker. I don't look forward to what he does. I don't know what his character is. I don't really care what his character is. I've preferred him more as the sort of member of the street gang Judgment Day than anything demon-wise. And this was fine. It was as good as I expected it to be, but not special in any way for me.
Can I say something potentially controversial about Finn Balor?
Yeah.
So I first came across Finn Balor around 2013 when I bought, I think it was a I don't know what it was, 17 disc G1 from the previous year. Wow. And he was in the G1 as Prince Devitt back in the day where I don't think New Japan World even existed then. And that was kind of my first big exposure to New Japan, again, after hearing, you know, various journalists talk about it. And I thought Prince Devitt at the time was about sort of Shelton Benjamin was in that G1, I'm sure. And you had like Ishii and Shibata and Okada and Tanahashi, and they were all quite a lot better than Devitt. And I thought that Benjamin was better than him as well. He was like one of the weaker ones in it, in a very good field, to be fair. But he would have some good matches with those really good people. But I never thought he was, and he was certainly better in WWE in ring when he first came in. But I don't ever think he's been better than good to very good, maybe sometimes. And that's it. He's not a top worker.
I remember seeing his matches as NXT champion and being like underwhelmed.
Just, yeah.
You know, he is a functional worker, don't get me wrong. Mid-card talent in WWE's main roster. Get it. You know, that's perfect. But I remember, like, when he came in, it felt like he was being hyped as some kind of, this is the best wrestler you'll ever see kind of thing. And he's just nowhere near it. Just for context, in the best wrestler of all time rankings, he lies 178th all time in my rankings.
Because he's not had that many good matches. And that's the fundamental proof right there, isn't it?
Yeah,
I think if he weren't in the Judgment Day, he probably would have been released, I think, by now.
Very possibly.
They've got a lovely old contract from Tony Khan.
Yeah, 100% he'd be over there.
Yeah, big time. Bullet Club reunion, let's go.
Before we wrap up this, and this is the last match, what do we think to Edge's, not, forget him going to AEW, don't care about that, but the fact that this was effectively the end for Edge. Like, what do we think of WWE's decision to effectively tell him, we've got nothing left for you? I think it's very interesting, because I don't think they've ever done that with a top star for a very long time.
Personally, I think it's absolutely the right thing. I'm just looking at Cage Match. I think he did three matches afterwards. You got all the value out of Edge that you could get, and now he's gone. And that's fine, because I don't actually think there's that many people, even if you're a diehard Edge fan, do you actually need to see him anymore? Surely you've seen everything you need to see. And it's the, you know, law of diminishing returns in the fact that his performances must get worse. And you know, he's not done anything in AEW, got a good pop to start off with, but wasn't at the pay-per-view last night. So yeah, he's stuck in. He's going to be wrestle Christian probably the next pay-per-view. Who cares?
Again,
so,
yeah. He had three matches against one another.
I know,
I mean, it just strikes me as weird, though, because WWE don't do this. WWE don't pack people off. It's a bit different when it's Ric Flair and he's in his 50s and been past his best for 20 years. But with Edge, like, they don't do this. This is weird. I think it's the right call too. I don't think there's anything left for him to do. But WWE are much more conservative than this usually. They usually go, well, we'll keep you around because you never know. We might get a few injuries and you're still someone who we can sell something on. Alex, any thoughts?
I mean, when he come back in the Royal Rumble, you know, I said this before, it just, I wasn't asked what at all. And that being said, they did get a lot of good work out of him. And I was kind of invested in him to a certain degree. They get, again, the triple threat match at Mania 37 is brilliant. He got a title match, a single match against Roman Reigns. That Money in the Bank, I think. It was a Money in the Bank, I think it was. But anyway, and then the Judgment Day stuff, even though that was a bit hodgepodge at the start, got a really good feud out of it, which lasted quite a while, involved in the Dominic stuff as well. And again, the Hell in a Cell match, it was just like a perfect kind of feud ender. But so then, yeah, that's it. There's nothing else. So yeah, see you later. Off you go. Another old wrestler gone, which is good. But I do get what you're saying. It's not, you know, they don't do it that often. And the person that sprung to mind when you said that is Randy Orton, because I mean, I like Randy Orton. I like him when he's got his teeth into something. But what else is there for him as well? Like, what else is there for Randy Orton to do? So maybe, I mean, to be fair, I mean, he's closer to Triple H and than Edge is. But yeah, he just when you were talking then, he just comes to my mind. I thought, yeah, maybe he's another one that they need to get rid of.
I was going
to
say his spot with Riddle, I thought was the perfect spot for him in a tag team with a younger person. And then you do the feud potentially, which I never end up doing. But yeah.
I was pretty much going to say the same thing, but about Edge. I was like, unless you can find someone for him to be in a tag team with who he can be like the Sting to, Darby Allin, then yeah, there's not a lot else you really worthwhile using him for. In terms of everything else, then, we do have the montage of the Hollywood spoofs. So we've got Goodfellas, The Joker, I believe, though I never saw the film, Top Gun, Stranger Things, Titanic, and I believe The Hangover, but I'm not certain about that. There's the one with the chest hair. I don't know what that's from.
40-year-old virgin.
Oh, it's from that. DVD, but I couldn't remember it at all.
Yeah.
It all kind of melted.
That is brilliant. That is really funny, that, when he's screaming, Holy Jim Duggan and Tony Blair's socks. It's absolutely fantastic. Good. They're good, these. They're not as good as the ones from 2021, though. The 21 ones are mainly 21 miles better than these, but they were all right.
So then Kayla Braxton introduces Bianca Belair and congratulates her on winning the match earlier in the night. Bianca says it means everything and Asuka took her to the limit. She's then joined by the girls from earlier who chant EST. Then there's a promo video for Backlash in Puerto Rico. Then we have highlights of the 2023 Hall of Fame induction ceremony. The inductees are Stacey Keibler, Andy Kaufman, Tim White, who wins the Warrior Award, The Great Muta, and Rey Mysterio, who is introduced by an impassioned speech by Conan. The 2023 Hall of Fame class are then introduced to the live crowd, Rey Mysterio wearing a truly awful Adidas suit. That's pretty much everything. I mean, they do the WrestleMania 40 Philadelphia video again, which we already commented on last week, and that's it. Any thoughts on the Hall of Fame class? And obviously, we've learnt today, as we're recording this, that Paul Heyman will be the first inductee into the 2024 Hall of Fame class. I wondered if we had any predictions for that.
I've got no thoughts on the Hall of Fame. Paul Heyman in the Hall of Fame. Yeah, maybe you can use the fee he gets from that Hall of Fame to write a few checks out to people that he didn't, that he owes money to in ECW, perhaps.
Ooh, I like it that he's going. I like Paul Heyman. Big fan.
I think he's one of the most overrated performers in the history of wrestling.
Oh, wow.
Really?
I think he's good. But his overblown facials, my tribal chief and all this, is like, it's bad drama, GCC. I think, it's just my view. Just like Kenny Omega is light years better than Shawn Michaels in ring. I just don't see it. Heyman's, my favourite Heyman performer is him a commentator. I think he's okay, but I just feel like I've seen it all before with him. But yeah, each their own.
Maybe that could have been the second talking point. I mean, first of all, Andy Kaufman, love it. I think we've mentioned it before, Man on the Moon. If you haven't seen the film Man on the Moon, watch it. Absolutely phenomenal film. And Tim White, there should be more referees. I know it's for the Warrior Award, but they should put like referees and they've done ring announcers because the Fink's in it, isn't he?
So
they should do referees as well. They should put referees in, but yeah.
All right, well, that is everything from this show and everything from WrestleMania 39. Right, two, the WrestleMania series is not yet finished because we are doing this year's WrestleMania, and that's still to come in the 2 weeks after WrestleMania 40 takes place. But let's get your thoughts and your scores on this show overall. Starting with you, Alex.
So this is a phenomenal show. Absolutely phenomenal. It's one of the best manias in all of all time, in my eyes. Not a bad match in sight. The first two matches are fairly decent, but then everything is awesome from there on in. The IC match is incredible. The women's match is incredible. A lovely little break with The Miz and Snoop Dogg. The Hell in a Cell match is incredible, but the main event is one of the best main events in Mania history, in my eyes. Everything about it is phenomenal. It's a quintessential Mania main event. So that's my match of the night, in an event whereby four of the seven matches are worthy of match of the night. So I'm giving it a very worthy 9 out of 10. And I'll not lie, if Cody wins and or the tag team showcases were swapped around, I reckon I might have gone for a 10 with this, because I absolutely loved it. And Mania, and in my eyes, Mania XL has got an extremely tough act to follow.
Wow, I'm just thinking if I could ever give a wrestling event 10, or if there is a wrestling event that I think exists that's a 10, and I don't think there is. But I'm not far off what you said there, Alex. I thought this was like we talked about, there's not a huge amount on these shows, which actually makes them quite palatable for this. There's obviously the video package and stuff, but I thought this was a really, really good WrestleMania. And when you got the IC triple threat match, Bianca, the main event, and the novelty of Brock versus a mask worked, I was flirting between 7 and 8, but I think I'm going 8. And I agree, I think if Cody won the title, this is a 9. And I'm not sure what you get. I can't even imagine a 10 in my mind. No AEW or New Japan or WWE events I think have got a 10, but this was really a great night. And I think if Cody won, this is one of the best nights, if not perhaps the best night in WrestleMania history. This was overall, this weekend was phenomenal, phenomenal stuff in WWE. It's just a shame that the next day all the unpleasantness was back for a brief period.
Yeah, but it was fleeting. It was fleeting. I am only giving this a 7. I thought the main event was excellent, and it is my match of the night. But I wasn't as high on the IC match as most people are. I wasn't particularly high on Finn and Edge, to be honest. It was good, but that's it. And I just felt like this was just a little bit weaker than the night before. I thought the night before was incredible. I thought the night before was truly one of the best WrestleMania nights ever. And I guess I'm not going to be that far off with this. I'm giving it a 7 out of 10 after all. So it's definitely the top 10 WrestleManias ever, but just not quite in that absolute God tier for me. Bianca Belair is my MVP, because I think, and it could have been her or Asuka, quite frankly, I just think to turn the crowd round is just excellent, excellent work. I don't know how, not many people are capable of it. You know, we've seen it time and again. How many people have we seen like just die on the WrestleMania stage because they're following a match that was really good? They managed it, so they deserve such credit for that. But yeah, and I don't think that the Cody Rhodes result played into that rating, if I'm honest. I don't think it did. I just don't think it was quite as good as what we saw the night before. And I think in total, what is there, like 6 matches or 7 if you include the Snoop Dogg match, maybe? I don't know. Maybe I'm miscounting. But it just, yeah, it felt like a strange show in general to me. Not quite on the par with what we saw the night before. Interestingly, Cage Match gives a 6.68 average rating
for
the show. But again, I think the rating for the main event is heavily kind of soiled by the result on the rating, which is understandable. I mean, that's what it's all about, right? So it's fair enough. So in terms of the league table, that makes WrestleMania 39 night 2 literally one place below WrestleMania 39 night 1. And they are the 4th and 5th best nights of WrestleMania, behind only 17, 19 and 30.
Yeah, that's
so they're
very
in fair. Top company there, basically. You've got to give them credit. 2 nights of WrestleMania this good on average is some pretty good going. It's just all about that result, I guess. It's just all about that result.
No, let's be really honest. WWE television during the first, if you count this as first quarter, it's just after first quarter, was some of the best TV they've ever done. The storylines through Royal Rumble, through Sami Zayn, into WrestleMania, they dealt with, there was no backlash on Cody that Sami didn't win. They did an expert job. This is some of the best week-to-week television they've ever done. Props to Triple H, just incredible stuff. And you can't argue that. And actually, I think, are there going to be some matches on this year's WrestleMania that are not really to my taste? Yes, I think that the weekend will be really enjoyable, and I'm hoping we'll have a new world champion at the end of it. So, and I'm on that show as well, so I can't wait to talk about Cody not winning again. And he's my MVP of this show, but this night as well.
I was just going to say, I don't think you've given your match of the night or MVP, but
main event and Cody, yeah. And also, I want to also say also for the listeners out there, we're all pretty fucked here. I don't know whether the bit where Alex described himself as feeling like a battered shit is going to work, but I feel like everyone, we've just bashed out. We had low energy at the start. We've bashed out easier 9 out of 10 podcasts there. So if you're driving in a car, I want you to sound your horn 5 times. And if you're standing anywhere else, I want you to raise both hands and say, yeah, 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 well done, guys. Okay, so do it right now.
Bring on the fire.
whatever the phrase is.
Do all that, but yeah, 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 go on, guys. Again, is in league with Randy Richter saying, girls just want to have fun.
Say that if you want to. Yeah, say that.
That's our official motto.
Mm. Or shave RWR into your chest there.
Yeah, do it.
The damnable thing is that Stephen doesn't know this yet, but we've got more to do after this podcast. So, it keeps on going. Anyway, thank you very much for joining us today. Alex, thanks you for your contributions.
Oh, thank you very much. Cheers.
And Stephen, also for yours.
A pleasure as always.
This has been the Random Wrestling Review. We are past the retrospective part of the WrestleMania series and just have one more WrestleMania to go. It's a new day. Yes, it is. Take care.